Frank, and sorry you can't stick around.
I'd like to hear it, but I won't catch up with everybody.
Safe travels.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Thanks. See you later, Dominic.
So as I said at the outset of the meeting, we are actually not taking this in the same order that we presented things in the agenda, mainly because Dominic had to take off. But in the first item that we're discussing here, we started off with some of the water quality issues and accomplishments that we've had over the years in dealing with those. And then in the course of that, we talked about some of the tools that were lacking that would help us do even better work, and that leads to these basic plan amendments, one of which actually Dominic touched on all three of them. So we're going to back up now and go back towards the accomplishments part. And so this is really looking back instead of forward. And I'll blame Dave Hodgins for this, because a while back, Dave was saying, I hope I'm not talking out of school here, Dave, but you need a private conversation.
Charge it.
Okay. Maybe I should have checked with you first. But Dave's actually our newest member on the board, so there's cover right there. Right? So anyway, Dave was saying, this was a while back, that we have the meetings with permits that come before us, and the board delivers on permits and enforcement actions. But it's kind of difficult to say, well, what has the regional board really accomplished in tangible terms? And sometimes it's kind of hard to say that with some real concrete examples. So I took that question to heart and decided that rather than talking about, as we frequently do in these office meetings, talking about maybe accomplishments of the last year and our priorities going forward for the next year, take a longer-term look. And I thought, again, a different way to do that than just talking program to program, which is normally the way we talk about our accomplishments, is to say, let's take a look at a watershed or two and see what the regional board has done within those watersheds that's actually made a difference. So we have a couple of watershed stories here. And we decided to pick a couple of watersheds. And admittedly, they may be a couple of watersheds that we have been more active in, but we picked a big one, actually the biggest one, the Salinas River watershed, to talk about, and then a small one, the San Luis Obispo watershed. So, let's see, do I have the pointer? So this map will give you some idea of the scale. So this is the Salinas watershed through here. And I can't remember some of you in the audience probably remember the acreage of the Salinas watershed.
It's all like that meaning, right?
Okay.
I know the mileage.
Is that our region, which isn't, the entire region isn't shown here, it goes on down to
big
past Carpinteria, is 11,000 square miles. And this does show most of the upper portions of our region. And I also know that the San Luis Obispo watershed, which is right here, about that size, I'll show, we'll zoom in on that, is only 2% of the Salinas watershed. So vastly different scales. And so here we are zooming in. This is the lower part of the Salinas. There's Nachimiano Lake up here. And here is the relatively little San Luis Obispo Creek watershed. And we're talking about the creek and the receiving water of San Luis Obispo Creek, which is San Luis Obispo Bay. And again, we're zooming in on it here. And we'll do some more zooming in. But this is the outline of San Luis Obispo Creek watershed. And I've talked about in the report about the variety of land uses that we have in San Luis Obispo Creek. It's actually pretty varied with quite a bit of agriculture, grazing, vineyards being predominant, some strawberries, and then urban uses, military uses, all kinds of different uses in the watershed. And it's a steelhead fishery. So this is the lower watershed, and this is the southern, kind of the southern extreme of the city of San Luis Obispo here. And I'm not going to talk about everything that we talked about in our report. We talked about accomplishments of the regional board and the regional board actions. I'm going to pick a few highlights. So here are some of those highlights I'm going to talk about. And so recycle facility refers to the San Luis Obispo wastewater treatment plant. They like to refer to it as a recycling facility, which it is. And the town of Avila Beach, which is at the tail, the lower end of San Luis Obispo Creek. And this is an older photo. This is 1994. And you can see down in here, notably, buildings. And at this time, these buildings were, and this beach was, they were underlain by oil from Unical operations. Here you can see a tank here, and this is all, up here is all tank farm. And out this way is the former Unical pier with pipelines that came up here to the tank. Well, those leaked, and what happened was the city, not the city, it's a town, an incorporated area, was stymied. No one could get loans on their property to make improvements, to even to sell the properties, for people to buy the properties with loans because of this contamination that became apparent, I think originally through a real estate transfer. I don't know if you, is that correct? So the board worked with trying to figure out ways to indemnify properties. When Russ might remember this, we worked with banking institutions to figure out this way to indemnify loans, to not have a more, to not have to have a more drastic solution to the problem. But ultimately, that failed. We spent a lot of time on that. That failed, and we had the Bank of America, one of the biggest banking institutions, involved, and their contaminated property vice president was involved in the committee that the board put together. We still couldn't come up with a way to do that, so ultimately the board worked with Unical and community members and basically came up with an enforcement action that was kind of like a consent decree, with consent being the key thing. It was an enforcement action that the board took that Unical did not object to. And so it was a settlement, basically, and part of the settlement included money to go towards mitigation, but it included digging up this section of the town, this part of the beach, and pulling the oil out. So here, this picture is later, 2002, and you can see that in this area, the buildings are gone. Now, this was just a trailer park. There wasn't a whole lot there in terms of structures, but nevertheless, we're starting to clear things out here. And now this is, we're skipping over the cleanup, but I thought I'd show you for contrast. This is more current day, 2007, it says down here. And here you can see the town is basically rebuilt. So backing up to the cleanup, John, you want to take over here? Because these are your slides.
Yeah, these are now 10-year-old slides. Some of you remember these slides probably. Thank you, Roger. So Roger gave you the aerial photograph of the tank farm itself, which is topographically higher up. Gravity drain lines or pump the lines down to the pier, which we actually had an off-site board meeting at the former Unical pier quite a few years ago, you may remember. Here's San Luis Creek coming through here. Now, this sort of yellowish footprint right here is actually the main plume itself, the former outline of the main plume itself. There are also about a dozen other plumes around town as well. Okay, so this is just a lower angle shot, and yeah, you can sort of see now the different cells here for the excavation are going to outline themselves. This was, I think, a 7 or 8 cell project, and basically took out, if you recall the aerial photographs, took out that front street corridor. That former trailer park was right here. There was a grocery store in this area. It was actually relocated. There was a yacht club, and there still is a yacht club where we oftentimes have our offsite meeting. It was relocated off of this bridge over into Wild Cherry Canyon, which was one of the points you had on the previous map for a project we've been involved in this watershed. So the total sum of this project ran about 3 years, and some very contaminated areas here. We're familiar with some of these things today, oil skimming and free product on water here. This is actually groundwater because you're working a project right next to the beach. seawater is coming in through the beach, and they're actually skimming the water off the groundwater here.
Skimming
the oil off the groundwater, thank you. And here, the excavation's about 20, 25 feet deep in this area. The sheep piles are in about 40 feet, 45 feet, I think. And this in aerial photograph, this is that former mobile home park right here. Edge of town, pipeline's coming right across here in this reference now. So,
thanks. One of the things I probably should have pointed out is that I don't know that we would have gotten to a settlement with Unocal in the fashion that we did had it not been for the fact that, let's see, back up here, oh, that's a little too far. Before we ever had this agreement with Unocal, the creek had meandered. So Dominic was talking about watershed functions, and that was an example of watershed changing. And it was because of winter storms, it was in danger of cutting in over here, kind of meandering over this way from its normal mouth over here. It was threatening an area which we found out through requiring Unocal to probe and delineate the extent of this oil. It was threatening to release that oil. So we worked with County Health Department to kind of have a united front, because if it had been released, it would have been a health threat, we thought, and County Health agreed. And the first cleanup order was just to clean up this west end of the beach. And really what that did was it showed the feasibility of doing the cleanup. I think it was also eye-opening to everybody, including Unocal, once they opened that up and they saw pictures, or they saw a site similar to the picture that John was showing with the sheet pile. But also it showed the feasibility of cleanup. And I think that was, so it was an excavation like this, but further over here. And I think that was one of the keys to being able to come to agreement, because they basically had this kind of a situation right next to the creek. And I think that was one of the keys to being able to proceed. So here is I'll move on to another project. And as I said, part of the resolution of this with Unocal was mitigation. So Unocal provided millions of dollars, and mostly to the community, some to Fish and Game, some that was under the regional board's authority to direct. And so some of the projects that came out of that, and I may have some other grants mixed up here. I don't remember exactly where all the projects came from. But the community was interested in extending their outfall, because the outfall did extend just about to here next to this is the municipal pier, not the Unocal pier. And it was pretty short outfall of the short diffuser. And originally I could see that little light dot right there. That's the buoy that marks the location of the current outfall, which was a project that we steered this money to be able to extend that outfall and provide greater initial dilution and further away from a swimming area. And since you can't see that very well, I've got a picture here. I did an inspection. This is me and my friend Daryl a couple weeks ago. We're inspecting this end of the outfall. Just make sure it's there. But actually, I can tell you that this, looking in towards the pier, there were swimmers out here. This is a very popular ocean swimming area, and it used to be that the swimmers would go right over the diffuser, which was not necessarily unsafe because they met requirements, but it's kind of on the ragged edge of safety, I guess you might say. So the community was very pleased with the regional board to be able to be able to extend this outfall and provide greater protection for beneficial uses. Now we'll head north a little bit. Notice we're heading north here. That's me making sure the rig is still up, which is always a good thing. And then, oh, look, we're beating bigger boats that are supposed to be faster than we are. We're going up coast, and we're going to take a look up here at the boatyard. Now, this was a boatyard that existed before. And John, I don't know if you remember, but I think this was one of the mitigation projects that came out of that. And so this is a boatyard empty, and the reason it's empty is because they completely regraded it I think that it used to just kind of drain out here, and as some of you know, there's all kinds of nasty stuff that can come off of boat projects. It's hull cleaning and boat painting and all that kind of stuff. So they regraded it, so all comes to a common point over here and provided a filtration system so that the water that drains out of here is much better quality. Now here it is filled with boats again, and the drainage is out here. There's a perspective view of it. So that was a tangible result of regional board work on that UNICAL project. This is a further, this is one of the sites that I highlighted on the big satellite photo. And this entire area in here is the Johnson Ranch Conservation Easement. And it's a project with City of San Luis Obispo in concert with Land Conservancy, I believe.
Yep.
And one of the goals is water quality protection. And you can see there's a lake here. There's a spring right up in here. The entrance it also provides a recreational opportunity with an entrance right down here by Highway 101. And this is on the outskirts of town. The southern end of San Luis Obispo is right up here. So I think it's an example of a city that is pretty progressive in their resource management, in their valuing resource protection, and actually putting their money where their mouth is as far as preserving some areas for recreation, for viewshed, for water quality protection. And this is another project that came out of the UNICAL.
And Guadalupe also funded this one. Both projects funded this one.
Okay. This is, these are pictures from the Johnson area. This is actually San Luis Obispo Creek. Just below that recycle facility, otherwise known as a sewage treatment plant. And that's that same picture, San Luis Obispo Creek. And as I said, it's a steelhead fishery. These are adult steelhead. And these are old. You can tell these are kind of old photos, right?
I thought that was you, Roger.
That's me when I was younger. And these are steelhead that were taken out of San Luis Obispo Creek. There are actually multiple ones here. It's kind of a grainy picture. But why am I pointing this out in terms of regional board accomplishments? This is just below the discharge point. This is the Los Osos overpass here. And it used to be that, you know, we have toxicity tests for virtually all municipalities that discharge the surface waters. And what that means is you take effluent, you expose test fish to it, and you see how they do. Well, back in before the early 90s, those fish never did very well. It was a death sentence for those fish. They pretty much all died. And it was due to high ammonia concentrations in the treatment plant effluent. The regional board took pretty serious enforcement action against the city of San Luis Obispo, not only for that problem, but also for some serious problems that they had with their collection system, overflows of raw sewage, which ended up at San Luis Obispo Creek, which didn't help the fish either, as well as public health. So we had a consent decree, actual consent decree, with the city of San Luis Obispo for them to make corrections of both their collection system and the treatment plant. They did that in early 90s, 94, and consequently, they don't have those toxicity problems in the creek anymore, and it's coming back as far as fishery. So those are, so there's the Johnson Canyon Reserve up here, the recycle facilities up here. One that I didn't mention that John just touched on is Cherry Canyon, which is actually a ongoing project right now. The board has said it's okay for allocation of $900,000 approximately $950,000 to the American Land Conservancy. And American Land Conservancy is trying to put that piece together with a bunch of other pieces to work out this deal for this piece of property that's up in here that drains down right here to San Luis Bay. And so that's another project that the regional board is producing some tangible results. One of their goals is water quality protection in that entire watershed. So it's a changed watershed. And like I said, I didn't even talk about some of the things that we talked about in the staff report further upstream and that affect the entire length of the creek. Now, moving on to the Salinas watershed. This is the mouth of the watershed, which a lot of times is blocked by sand if there isn't sufficient flow. This is the watershed, this is the river at San Ardo, looking downstream. This is actually Nacimiento River that comes into Salinas River, so part of the watershed. These aren't showing up very well, but these are rainbow trout in this water. So, going back in time, and this goes back to actually before my time, which means it's in the early 70s. And this looks like a nice picture of the Pacific Grove tide pool, not wastewater treatment plant tide pool, but this tide pool. And it does look nice. However, when I first came to work for the board in 75, one of the first trips I made included a stop here at Pacific Grove. And the staffer that I was with, Vern Jones, took me to the treatment plant, and then we walked out in this area, and we actually stood on the end of the outfall in this tide pool. It was low enough tide. It wasn't extreme low tide. We were standing on the end of the outfall. The treatment plant was strictly primary treatment, which means no biological filtration. And this is that treatment plant. Here's that tide pool. The structures are still there. All it had was a primary settling tank, and this was actually an offline digester. It's not part of the water treatment train. It's just a digester for the solids. So basically, I had one tank for settling, and then out to this outfall that ended where you could stand on it. And those of you have been, most of you have been here, maybe all of you have been here, and you know this is just a primo spot on the coast for tide pools and scenic value, and it's pretty incredible that in my lifetime that's what we had. So what did the regional board do about that? Well, there are other problems that were similar. Here's Pacific Grove right here. There are other problems that were quite as dramatic, but nevertheless we had problems with short outfalls for all these communities along here, and failures of the individual systems. So the regional board adopted this prohibition zone. Dominic was talking about forms of regulation. Prohibition zone's one of them. And that's what we did here. And what that did was force the issue for these folks to regionalize. And that is what begat the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Association, which I'll show here. Here's the regional treatment plant, which is just outside of Marina. A regional treatment plant here, which then subsequently, after, and by the way, the regional board steered money towards this. It was actually, they were state and federal grant dollars, but we worked hand in hand on making this happen, and built the plant. They then went into the stage of seeing if tertiary treatment would be feasible for watering crops in the area because of, as Dr. Hunter pointed out, seawater intrusion. Big problem. This is Salinas Basin is a basin that's out of hydrologic balance and has been for a long time. So one of the goals of this project was to try to make a dent in the overdraft, that hydrologic imbalance. And I was on the study that included work on viruses and bacterial testing to make sure that the different treatment trains that were under review would pass muster and be okay as far as agricultural use goes. And that study went on for, it's supposed to be 5 years, it went on for 7 years. But passed with flying colors, and consequently, then we, oops, I'm going the wrong way. So there's that regional treatment plant, and these are all the communities that are connected to that regional treatment plant, and this is the area that now is irrigated with recycled water. This project alone was responsible for taking care of about 40%, I believe that's about right, of the seawater intrusion overdraft. So pretty significant with this one project. And now with this infrastructure in place, it's my understanding is it's a component of the next step of the with Nacimiento and San Antonio water coming down and being used in greater quantities by diverting from the river and used in some of the same area for the same purpose. And I don't know, does anyone know what that's supposed to do in terms of the overdraft and the imbalance? If this is 40%, I thought you might.
Make it better.
Yeah.
That's just a guess.
You're right about that. And part of the, here's Veranda right here. That was another one of the projects that we worked on. This is the community of Veranda that's just outside of Russ's house. No, just outside of Salinas.
Just a few blocks.
Yeah. And this is on the west side of the freeway. This was all, you can see the density is comparable to the city of Salinas. But it was all on septic tanks, and they had problems with clay soils and septic tanks not getting along well and causing some pretty serious problems out there. So that was another one of the projects that we worked on at that time to sewer that and make it a part of this overall project, which has been, I think, a big success. And there's an outfall as part of the project, a sort of a relief valve, but that's only used now, since the recycling has been so popular, so successful, it's only used for about 25% of their water. During heavy rainfall periods when they're just not able to irrigate as much. So that's, and this is where we are right now. Let's see, where are we right now? This is Elkhorn Slough. So where are we, Michael? Are we back here somewhere? Our present location. And the reason I point out this slide is here's the Moss Landing power plant right here, and Michael worked on permitting for the he was a staff person who was working on permitting for the Moss Landing power plant, and it started out with, I know it was PG&E before, but then it was Duke Energy.
Okay.
So Duke Energy. And one of the things that we were able to do with, and I won't get into a lot of the details, the board members are certainly aware of it, but it was basically mitigation for the entrainment effects of the once-through cooling of the power plant. And the regional board, as part of the permit, included $7 million in mitigation that went to the Elkhorn Slough Foundation for whole watershed, that is, work throughout the watershed for basically improving the watershed. So a variety of projects. But what's happened is the Elkhorn Slough Foundation, where we are right here, is that, you know, once a non-profit group gets some money, they can leverage that money to attract more money. And so it's been leveraged to what? $7
million?
$30 million.
They leveraged $30 million in the bank. And then for many of the projects that they did, in the years following the board's approval for the 7 million, many of the projects they did there were able to leverage it 11 to 1. So for every dollar they spent out of the 30 million, they were able to get 11 million from outside sources.
Yeah.
Pretty extraordinary.
Right. And if we had time, Mark Silverstein could talk all day about the good work that they've been doing in this watershed, to benefit water quality as well as other functions of the watershed. Now this is just south of here, and this is Morrocoho Slough, which comes up into the Moss Landing Harbor. And this was another project that where the regional board steered some grant funds to actually converting this into a wetland. This is an area that was, I believe this is diked here, or berm, and constrained. It used to be wetlands. You can kind of see the remnants of them here. And through, I believe it was a Watershed Institute, they've turned this into wetlands, and they actually used, to kind of seed the wetlands, they used recycled water from the aforementioned project. And here you can see some wetlands that are, this is a later picture, 2007, and then here's a close-up that shows some additional wetlands that are forming in here. And then further up the river, or actually to the south, because the Salinas is known as the upside-down river. But this is in the city of Paso Robles, and this is a very recent and really ongoing project. They just had their kind of ribbon-cutting ceremony a few weeks ago in Paso Robles. And it's their river corridor project. And again, consistent with some of these other conservation areas that I've mentioned, the idea includes water quality improvements. This is all river corridor in here, and the city has acquired this property with the idea of managing it to be more of a riparian corridor and less of a off-road vehicle, illegal camping, you name it, kind of a use. So this is a project that the city is very proud of, and they hope to, with trails along the edge, that sort of thing, actually provide more of a connection for the city between the west side and the east side of the city, which has been divided by the river. And so they're very proud of this. So it's an example of a water quality project that a municipality is using to improve their city, and they think to make it more livable. And I think so, too. Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention, why did I point this out? We steered grant money towards this once again. So we were part of this, and they acknowledged the regional board when Howard Colt and I attended the ribbon-cutting ceremony just a few weeks ago. So that's a few of the highlights I wanted to mention. Again, there are a lot of other projects that we've talked about in our write-up, but these are just a couple examples of changed watersheds in San Luis Obispo and Salinas. And so, Dave, I hope that answers your question.
It's the beginning.
So our next, that's the conclusion of item number three.
Okay.